Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Nation's capital in Washington, D.C., a city all dressed up and filled to capacity to celebrate the inauguration of George Herbert Walker Bush as the 41st President of the United States.
The South Carolina State Park Correctional Center has the Godfather of Soul on ice.
You don't see a half-clad woman dancing in front of burning crosses all that often on television.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
All right, we're back once again. Yes, it's time for the Decibel Geek Podcast. It's getting to be the end of the year, but we're going on with a bang. I'm Aaron Camaro, that's Chris Sinzak, and man, have we been busy lately.
Super busy. That's why.
Super busy.
That's why if you're a subscriber, you're hearing this a day late.
But, yeah.
And we'll go ahead and tell you, next week will be a day late also, because we got lives.
It's just that time of year, you know?
Yeah, holiday season. Aaron and I both have families and full-time jobs and all that good stuff, and we have a lot on our plate, and we've also been doing Decibel Geek stuff over the past
couple weeks. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of Decibel Geek stuff. We're planning into the new year already.
Already got stuff lined up, and we promised it'll be worth the wait. And it's been a while since we've done a year in review, so this is a big one.
Yeah, we're due for it, you know. And as you guys know, we always put a lot of work into these years in review, and we always have a good time doing it. Our aim is to be, you know, educational and entertaining at the same time, kind of looking at the whole year in review through the eyes of rock and roll. You know, from a standpoint of we're looking at what albums came out, along with the kind of cool stuff that happened that year.
Yeah, pop culture, news stories, all that stuff. It's a trip down memory lane, and you know, I put up, and I think I may just continue to do this route in the future, just put up a poll on the fan page, facebook.com/decibelgeek, and ask, you know, give like 3 or 4 years and let the people pick. And and this week is 1989, and that's what you guys picked pretty much overwhelmingly. So
yeah, it's a good year.
Yeah,
there's a lot of great stuff in 1989.
Oh man, we could always make these more than two parts, but that's kind of the challenge. You know, we want to just break them into two, one half of the year and the other half. And then I had somebody on the fan page say, well, why don't you do more than two? And I'm like, well, because that's where you guys come in and tell us what we missed.
Right. Yeah, that's always fun to go back after the show's released and then go to the Facebook page where the community is happening and listen to everybody go, how could you leave out this? And how could you do a year in review about 89 without that? You know, it's great. We love that.
And we agree with you.
Yeah, totally.
Because we agonize over our picks for this every time.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we each pick a handful of songs to showcase, and when it's all said and done, we feel the same way.
Yeah.
You know, we couldn't do... But, you know, we can always go back and do, like, a part three on these years anytime.
Or the Radio Revisited thing. We haven't done that in forever. And those are fun to do.
That was a one and done, I think.
That was fun to do.
Yeah,
to pretend you're back in the year. So, before we get into the year, 89 the year, let's do Geeks of the Week. These are the people that shared and retweeted last week's episode, the Ride for Dime episode.
Yeah, we had a lot of great guests on that episode. I want to thank Nick Cantonese for being on there. Jose from Sirius XM Radio was there. You know, he's a metalhead through and through. You know, we talked to Nick Bocott was on the show, you know, and of course Chad Lee and all the great people that were a part of that, and so much fun that day, and we can't wait to do it again next year.
Yeah, I'll definitely be there next year. All right, so Geeks of the Week is Todd Cunningham, Joe Lescon, Brad Kalmanson, David Alpazar, Howard Tate, Brent Tibbetts, Derek Novak, PJ Brown, Mike Blunt, Lee Maslin of the Audio Junkies podcast, Brent Walter, Liz Tweedy, Warren Money, Rodney Dixon, Brant Cattell, Chad Pollock, Chad Lee, Nick Catanese, Jose Mangan,
right on,
Hoops, Billy Hardaway, Music Mags and Wax, Darren Wayne Gibson, Nonsensicast Radio, Raw Magazine, Hot Metal Magazine, Loudmouth, and Faces Rocks Magazine.
So cool. We thank you guys so much for being our marketing team, because we're just two guys outside of Nashville, Tennessee, right. And we're just, you know, doing cool stuff like getting to go meet some of our rock legend heroes and, you know, bringing the stories back and sharing them with you guys. And, you know, so we don't have a huge marketing team or anything like that. So we rely on you, and we appreciate That's you right. so much.
We can only fly our concert, you know, parking lot so often, which is what we did the other night.
We sure did.
That should be a bonus track. But, yeah, so let's just get on with it. So I guess I need to break out my 89 facts,
yeah,
right?
The way we always start the show, with Chris's facts of the year, the most important stuff.
Okay, I don't have bacon. We'll have to do bacon next week.
We do have bacon.
Or do we? Do you do? Oh, you have bacon. Okay.
Look, it's on there.
It is. Oh, yes, it is. Okay, sorry, guys. Average cost of a new house in 1989, $120,000. Average income per year is $27,450.
Yeah.
Average monthly rent was $420
in 89.
A gallon of gas was 97 cents, and the average price of bacon was $1.75 per pound.
Not bad, man.
Salad days.
It always it kind of blows my mind, but it's been consistent through all these years that bacon always is more valuable than gasoline.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, even to this day. Bacon is more
Would you rather
expensive.
Have a gallon of gas or a pound of bacon?
When it comes on down to it, you know.
or you could have
bacon, what? How is it? Bacon will get you through times of no gas better than gas will get you through times of no bacon.
True. And bacon also converts into gas after you eat it.
There you go.
There you go. See, circle of life.
It all comes together in 1989.
Okay, so let's go into January. Let's see. January 20th, George Herbert Walker Bush, as you heard in the intro, was inaugurated as our 41st U.S. president. And either you love that or you hate that, depending on what side of the aisle you sit on.
Right. You know, I don't.
Yeah. On to the next story.
I guess we'll just keep on going. Yeah. Let's get back to more music stories. Here's one for you. James Brown, you know, the godfather, you know, he's sentenced in Georgia to 6 years in jail in connection with a police chase that rolls through two different states. Yeah,
I remember this.
It was huge in the news. You know, he'd gone crazy.
Well, cocaine's a hell of a drug. There's an interview with him. I was, you know, I go through all the stuff to get clips for the intro and stuff. And there's a video of an interview with him with CNN around this time. And it was right after he got arrested. And the woman interviewing him was like, Mr. Brown, it's nice to have you on the show, and looks like you've been into some real trouble lately. And his response was, living in America. And then there's like 10 seconds of silence, and he's like, come on. And she's like, well, Mr. Brown, I don't know how to react to that. You just got arrested. He's like, I'm fine. And I mean, he's blitzed out of his mind. No longer with us, but he was fun back in the day, man.
Yeah. Wow.
So
it wasn't real good to be James Brown in 1989, but you know who was really good to be in 89? John Bon Jovi. And especially if you're friends with John Bon Jovi, because Bon Jovi and Dave the Snake Sabo had been friends since they were young, and they made a deal way back then that said whoever made it big first would help the other one out. So by the late 80s, like I said, Bon Jovi was in a position to offer a lot of help, and hiring Sebastian Bach on as a lead singer didn't hurt their chances either. So after playing for a while on the East Coast, they get picked up by rock manager extraordinaire Doc McGee and signed to Atlantic Records. From there, it's off to Lake Geneva, Wisconsin with the one and only Michael Wagner, and this is the result. Kicking off 1989 the right way. Skid Row debut album comes out in January. Amazing album. You know what? If we were doing a list of best debut albums, I'd put that one up there pretty high.
I remember I got that cassette tape for Christmas in 1989.
Yeah.
And I remember I must have played it 100 times in a row when I got it. and just loved it. Yeah, and although and like, it was my favorite song was Big Guns.
Yeah, I always like that one, Piece of Me. You know, the whole thing. It's great songs from a super cool band. The guitar combo of Sabo and Scotty Hillers, I still say, is very underrated as far as guitar combos.
Yeah,
you got to put those guys right up there. You know, and of course, the one-of-a-kind, mind-blowing vocals from Sebastian Bach, who, you know, back in 89, he played the role of the young, hard-partying, brash, loud, badass to a T. You know,
now he's the old, hard-partying, badass, brash.
He's still out there doing it, you know, and doing it in style. You know, who can forget the VHS, Oh Say Can You Scream?
Yeah.
I mean, I watched the hell out of that over and over. Remember when the deal with the bottle, somebody threw the bottle up on stage.
Oh, the bottle incident, yeah.
And busted Sebastian Bach in the head, and he got mad and went to throw it back at the guy and hit the wrong person, then jumped in the crowd and beat the guy's ass.
Right.
And, oh, man. That was
it's on
chaos.
YouTube.
But that VHS, you watch that and go, wow, these guys are badass, you know?
Yeah.
The AIDS Kills Fags Dead t-shirt, man, that was something, you know? He got a lot of
heat for
that.
He got a lot of trouble for that.
You know? But that was Sebastian Bach, me and Sebastian Bach and the girls. You know, the girls love the guy. My wife still is in love with him.
Yeah, he was the pinup model of that era for sure. And then, you know, I think Doc McGee put it best with Sebastian as low IQ, high RPM.
There you go. Add all that together with the stellar production and you can't lose, you know. We're going to find out as we go through 1989 that there's some of the best produced albums of all time came out in 89.
Definitely. And
so hell of a way to start out, Skid Row debut album.
Yeah, that's January, and then we'll move on into February. And on February 10th, I know Aaron will be interested in this story, to gain deregulation, the WWF admits that pro wrestling is an exhibition and not a sport in a New Jersey court. And
what?
Thousands of kids' dreams were shattered.
What are you talking about? I don't remember that.
That's what it's...
You better check your facts. I'm pretty sure...
My facts are rock solid.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure professional wrestling's real, my friend.
It's still real to me, damn it.
I think you better get the fact department in on that one. I don't recall that story at all.
I still remember I had an uncle who was a ring announcer, and for when I was a kid, as I got older, I'd be like, come on, it's not real. And he's like, no, I promise you it's real. I wouldn't lie to you.
Yeah.
And then he takes me to an exhibition, and I see a guy throw an elbow, goes down right next to the guy's neck on the ground, hits the mat, and the guy goes, oh! And then me and my brother looked at each other, and we're like, oh, my God.
What is this?
It's not real.
Yeah, I know.
It shattered me.
My whole young life was spent with my dad, like, wrecking it for me on a normal basis all the time.
Dad, oh, really?
Why are you watching that garbage? It's fake. It's not even real. You know, talking about, like, you know, wrestling being huge business back then in the entertainment. In 89, a lot of albums are selling a lot of copies. You know, this is like some of the prime years for being
a band. For hard rock and metal especially.
You know, even, you know, talking about Skid Row a minute ago, number 6 on the U.S. Billboard album charts, number 40 at least in all the major music markets everywhere in the world with that one. Of course, the huge hit singles, I Remember You, went to number 6, 18 in Life. You know, everybody knows that
huge
song.
Yeah.
Number 4, this is the highest selling album ever released by Skid Row.
Yeah, it is.
So, you know, a lot of big selling albums. Another one moving on into February, a great album that came out, The Great Radio Controversy by Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is their follow-up to their 86 debut album, Mechanical Resonance. And after touring for 3 years supporting bands like Def Leppard, Poison, David Lee Roth, and Alice Cooper, Tesla's back with this one. Great album, The Great Radio Controversy.
Give it everything you got. On me.
Frank Hannon there on guitar.
Hell yeah. Tesla was a band that found a lot of great success in the late 80s. But, you know, like I said, talking about some of those bands they toured with, Def Leppard, Poison, David Lee Roth, Alice Cooper, what those guys were doing in 89. Tesla, you know, they're a hard rocking band, but they don't really so much fit in with the rest of the bands that are coming out at that time. You know, it's like, is there such thing as a Bakersfield sound in metal?
Kind of. That's a good way of putting it. Well, but they're the Sacramento sound, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, this album's chocked full of great heavy rock tunes. It also contains the quintessential 80s love ballad, Love Song.
Yeah, I love that song.
You know, huge hit. The U.S. is a big U.S. Top 10 hit single with a video and heavy rotation on MTV. Drives a lot of record sales for these guys. Up next for Tesla, more acoustic jamming.
Oh, yeah, they're super breakthrough at that point.
But yeah, this one goes to 18 on the charts. It's the highest-selling album ever released by Tesla.
I remember when they did a tour with Great White that summer.
Yeah.
And it came through here, and I wasn't allowed to go. I was still deemed too young.
Oh.
I was so pissed off at my parents for that.
I bet.
I was wanting to see that show badly. So on February 17th, the rock royalty couple of the video age, David Coverdale marries Tawny Katan.
Yeah.
And all of us that were in puberty at that era know exactly about Tawny.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And White
Snake. Sexy
White
girl and, rolling around on the cars.
And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and White Snake with guitars going on all different directions. It was a great combination. But, yeah.
Hair
they
to the
were,
ceiling.
Yeah, they both of them. Yeah. In stereo. Nice. But, yeah, it was. They were the quintessential, basically, hair metal couple.
They were. They really were.
A good-looking couple. All right, let's move into March.
A lot of hair product between the two of them.
All right, so March 21st, everyone remembers this story.
Yeah, this was a pretty big deal because Madonna, back in 89, she really wanted people to think she was a slut.
Yeah, well,
that was her whole gimmick.
And she worked hard at it.
Really hard. She's like, I'm a slut, and I want people to know it. You know, of course, we're talking about the music video that was taped in late December of 88. It attracts criticism for its use by the Catholic Church because it's got crosses burning in the background, but it's, I don't know, it was a whole crazy situation where she's dancing around half naked in front of burning crosses on, what was it a commercial for?
She did the video. It's for the song Like a Prayer.
Yeah.
And the video had all the stuff with the crosses and like a black Jesus, you know, behind bars and...
So controversial.
At the time, it was super controversial, but back then, but today, it probably wouldn't get a second look.
What a controversial slut.
There was no twerking at all. But so that she did that video for MTV, but at the same time did a clean video for a Pepsi campaign.
Oh, okay.
And it was like her just dancing around with kids and stuff, and it was totally clean.
Right.
She did. So they premiered that commercial video on the Super Bowl that year, and... Like the next day, MTV premieres the controversial version.
Oh, okay.
And the minute the Pepsi execs saw that version, they yanked that commercial right away. They were like, we're not going to back this because they knew the churches were going to come after.
They didn't know who Madonna was, right?
Well,
they had no clue.
Corporate America, they're going to protect their interests. But yeah, it was a huge story. I remember all the outcry over it.
For sure, a
massive story. And then 3 days later, a bigger story happened with the Exxon Valdez, which was a tanker ship.
Oh, man, that was
it
huge.
It spilled 11 million gallons of crude oil into Alaska's Prince William Sound.
That's the first time I can ever remember that happening and being such a big deal where you got the images of the birds with the oil all
tragic.
Over them and everything, man. Yeah. It was terrible.
It was. I'm not like a super big animal lover. I mean, I'm not an animal hater.
He's an animal hater.
I don't run it. I don't walk around in rallies or anything. But like, I remember that story. Just all the images were heartbreaking, and all these animals just dying. And then when I was doing the research for this, I read up on it, and I think they said that every single rescue worker that was there is dead.
Oh wow!
Like they all died because of chemicals.
Dang, yeah. I never knew that.
Yeah, that's new information to me because I didn't know it either. But I said the last of the workers died like in the past year or so.
That's crazy. We're breaking news stories here on Decibel Geek.
News.
Holy shit.
You hear it first.
That's not funny.
where's the baseline for P Cells?
Let's just get back to the music, I think.
Okay. So
keep it light.
It's time for my first pick of the show. We are in March, and on March 14th, Extreme released their self-titled first album. It sold modestly around 300,000 copies, produced by a producer named Mac, who had worked with Queen and ELO, and that influence can comes through a bit in the sound of this album.
Yeah, a little bit.
They would go on to do Porno Graffiti after this, and that was their explosive, you know, big hit album. This has some really cool songs on it, though. And I remember seeing the video for the song. Extreme did not have a great look at this period, but they were a little too cheesy at this point. And this song is pretty cheesy, but for 1989, the age I was at, about 12 years old, I thought it was a fun song. This is Extreme with Mother.
Your eyes as well as your ears? Check out Decibel Geek on Instagram. Go to Instagram.com/Decibel Geek and see for yourself.
Get your skis shined up, grab a stick of juicy fruit. The taste is gonna move ya. Take a sniff, pull it out. The taste is gonna move ya when you pop it in your mouth. Juicy fruit is gonna move ya. It chews the soft, it gets right to ya. Juicy fruit, the taste is gonna move ya.
Yo, yo, this is MC Tone Loc, and now you can reach me live and direct on my brand new Funky Cold Medina Hotline. It's easy, just pick up your phone and call. And if you're one of my lucky randomly selected callers, you get to talk to me, Tone Loc. So hurry up and do it, you know what I'm saying? You might be the chosen one. 1-900-909-TONE. Peace.
$2 for the first minute, 45 cents for each additional minute. Kids, get your parents' permission first.
All right, we're back into the world of 1989. This is the Decibel Geek Podcast. And man, Black Sabbath in 89. Is it really Black Sabbath?
I think so.
I mean, is it like the Tony Iommi band?
It's Gray Sabbath. not quite black enough.
Right on.
But I like that. I like the Tony Martin stuff.
Me too.
It's good.
We'll have to maybe go back and do another side of Black Sabbath. We could.
There was a lot of fun stuff on that episode.
It was. That was one of my most learning experiences on this show.
God,
was that one.
So much research on that show.
Oh, man. Talk about research. We've done a lot of it for this one this week. So we better get right back to it. Let's talk about 1989 in sports.
All right.
Starting out in the NFL, the San Francisco 49ers defeat the Cincinnati Bengals 20-16 in Super Bowl 23 with MVP wide receiver for the 49ers, Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
Troy Aikman is chosen by the Dallas Cowboys as the first pick in the NFL draft. The Green Bay Packers choose Tony Mandarich at number 2. Barry Sanders, Derek Thomas, and Deion Sanders are still on the board. Why? Why?
Because they wanted the incredible bulk.
In the World Series, the Oakland A's sweep San Francisco Giants 4-0. NBA, the Detroit Pistons sweep LA Lakers 40-0. That's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's very last season.
That was an awesome series.
It's All-Canadian Stanley Cup, the Calgary Flames over the Montreal Canadiens 4-2. Still Wayne Gretzky still wins the NHL MVP.
Of course.
NASCAR champion Rusty Wallace, male athlete of the year Joe Montana, female athlete of the year Steffi Graf.
Wow.
And in the biggest news, sports news story of the year, at WrestleMania 5 at Trump Plaza at Atlantic City in the main event, a man who finds himself on the other side of things. The challenger, Hulk Hogan, defeats Macho Man Randy Savage to regain the WWF World Heavyweight Championship.
Not bad for a non-sport.
It's real.
You saw what happened in February. Come on.
There you go. Right there.
It was a great entertainment event.
Yeah, it was. That was awesome.
That's when the whole sports entertainment term got coined, I think, was around that time.
Yeah.
So
the mega powers explode.
And I remember that 49ers-Bengals Super Bowl was an exciting game.
Yeah, icky shuffle, all that good stuff back then.
So move into April. News in April, April 9th. The Rolling Stones bassist Bill Wyman announces he's going to marry a 19-year-old girl who had been his girlfriend for 6 years.
That's where it's like the dramatic pause. He announces he's going to marry a 19-year-old who's been his girlfriend for 6 years.
So she was 13 when they started dating, and he must have been about, what, 50 at that time?
50 at the time in 89.
What the fuck? How does Bill Wyman get a pass on that?
Right, it's like... Well, you know, kids, 1989 was a long time ago, and it was a different
time. I don't remember any rage
really
about this at all. If that happened now, oh, my God, he'd never hear the end of it.
No kidding. You're right.
He's a pedophile.
That is very strange.
What the fuck?
I don't know. I don't know how that works. I guess because he's a member of the Rolling Stones.
All righty.
They get a pass.
Wow.
Him and Ted Nugent.
Oh, this is after they did the album Dirty Work.
Yeesh.
All right. Anyway, on to thrash music. I've got a pick. Sepultura put out Beneath the Remains on April 7th. This was their third studio album, the first one released on Roadrunner Records. Claimed by many as a classic in the thrash industry.
Yeah.
Recorded in Brazil and produced by Scott Burns. And if you heard the stuff they put out before this, this was kind of a quantum leap forward for them.
Oh, man,
sound.
This was a massive leap forward. The stuff before this is...
It's almost
unlistenable.
Yeah, I mean, the conviction was there, but it just didn't have the right sound. But
no, the timing, everything was way off.
And this is, you know,
this
is pre-Roots and stuff like that, but it's still a really good album. And this is a track called Stronger Than Hate. Of a kill 'em all type sound to that stuff. I
like it. Yeah. I like that stuff.
That's good. Max Cavalera, Igor Cavalera.
Heavy. Good old Sepultura.
Yeah, I had to get a little bit of thrash into the episode, right?
Oh, yeah. There was some great thrash stuff coming out in 89. I think we probably got more of that coming up as we go.
Speaking of thrash, on April 12th, Michael Jackson's named the King of Pop.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was named the King of Thrash.
After receiving the Soul Train Heritage Award. I'm not sure what the hell that means. But
it means you're the king of
pop.
He's
the king of
pop, apparently.
So, yeah.
Somebody can just name you that, and that's what you become.
And this was his second renaissance after the Bad album came out the year before.
Yeah, this is kind of like where he starts to change colors and fall apart and all that stuff.
Put them in water and they change colors. Sorry. That was not meant to be racist.
Now for more rock and roll.
Yeah, okay.
Let's see. Up next, I got one. It's a good one here. After being a pretty big deal in the UK since 1984, The Cult hits it big everywhere else in 1989 with Sonic Temple. If you're going to make it big in rock in 1989, you better get Bob Rock.
Yeah.
He's going to make it happen for you. He's going to make you accessible to the Americans. You know, big overseas, now it's time to take over America. We need Bob Rock.
Right.
The single Firewoman was a huge hit on rock radio, who never stopped overplaying it.
Yeah, and I played it in the intro.
Yeah, that song, you can hear it any modern rock station. That's weird, though.
It still gets a lot of airplay.
They take that one cult song, and they throw it in the mix, and it comes up all the time.
Yeah.
But if they only knew that there was other great cult
always,
songs,
too. It's either that or Love Removal Machine. Those are like the two that they always seem to play.
Yeah, rarely the other one. Always Fire Woman. You know, other strong tracks on this album include songs like Sun King, American Horse, and Automatic Blues.
The best Zeppelin song that Zeppelin never did. A little bit of Black Dog in that one.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's good.
You know, every successful rock band in 1989 is getting some exposure on MTV, and The Cult is included in that. Besides Fire Woman, there's videos made for Edie, Chow Baby, and Sweet Soul Sister. And, of course, the now iconic rock album cover featuring Billy Duffy and his Les Paul. You know, that's
an album
cover.
You think
that
pissed off the rest of the guys?
I don't know. I mean, if you look back on it now, it's such a recognizable album cover.
Oh, totally.
But maybe at the time, I bet you Ian Asbury was like, what the hell?
Do you think one of the other members said, how would I know? I'm just one of the out-of-focus guys in the back.
Oh, man, that wouldn't surprise me. Number 10 on the U.S. Billboard album charts, number 2 in the U.K., and it is their highest charting album that's ever been released by The Cult.
Such a unique band. I mean, and they crossed over genres, and we've talked about it before, but the people wanted to really pigeonhole them when this album came out. Like, it was
right.
Like, oh, it's a hair band. And, like, they were anything but a hair band.
There's a lot of these bands we're going to talk about in 1989 that are all kind of pigeonholed into the hair band thing, but there's really, you know, look at the difference between Skid Row mm-hmm. to Tesla to The Cult, you know? The difference between those bands, you know, are pretty good, you know, but they're all still kind of, yeah, put into that same bucket.
And another group that, you know, got unfairly lumped in was New Kids on the Block, right?
Yeah. No, they weren't. I don't know. What were they lumped in with?
I don't know. Talent. Now, April 24th, Massachusetts declares that day New Kids on the Block Day.
Wow.
And it was a dark day for America.
Jeez, it seemed like in 1989, every day was New Kids on the Block Day.
No shit.
That stuff was everywhere. Yeah. You know, my grandma, you know, God rest her soul, I love her so much, you know, and miss her. But when I was a little kid, she went on a trip to Arizona and Mexico, mm-hmm. and she said, you know, I'm going to be looking for gifts for people, Aaron.
No.
You know, what would you like me to bring you back? And I said, you know, hey, if you can find me some cool rock band T-shirts, that would be great. You know, because in 89, you know, that's part of my everyday wardrobe. It's got to be a black T-shirt with a band logo on it.
Yeah.
And, of course, she asks around and says, well, what's a popular band? And,
oh,
of course,
no.
It's just, she comes back, and it's one of the things where it's like, oh, yeah, thanks, Grandma. She's like, oh, put it on. Oh, no, I think I'll...
save it for a special occasion.
Yeah, I'll save that one.
Like when there's a bonfire. You didn't put it on once just to see.
I'll tell that story in a SoundCloud sometime, how the New Kids on the Block T-shirt actually came back out into my life.
Oh, no.
But in the meantime, we're talking about 1989, so we've got to talk about Great White, Twice Shy.
All right.
Now, if you've never heard Great White's cover of Once Bitten, Twice Shy by Ian Hunter, you were probably dead already by 1989.
Yeah, because everyone heard it.
If you were about our age, then you've probably seen the video on MTV 100 times that year alone. If you love Hair Nation on Sirius XM, you've probably heard it 5 times already today.
Yeah, it still gets played all the time.
The massive success of that single powered this album to the top of the charts, but this one's packed full of other killer tracks as well.
Great album. Says there weren't deep lyrics in 1989.
Deep. Great White's fourth studio album is a follow-up to their successful Once Bitten, released in 87, featuring what I believe everyone would consider to be the classic Great White lineup of Michael Laherty on guitar and keys, Audie Desbro on drums, Tony Montana on bass, Mark Kendall on lead guitar, and our good friend Captain Jack Russell on lead vocals.
Yeah, awesome voice.
Stellar production at the hands of Alan Niven on this one.
Really? He produced it?
Yep.
He was their manager.
Yep. Bobby Brown's in the videos.
Oh, yeah.
This is kind of her introduction. I think she might have done one or two before Great White. But
she did a horrible video for Hurricane.
Hurricane, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, and then she graduated to Great White and then went to Warrant and got married.
Yeah.
It's a great album. Remember Wasted Rock Ranger?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that was like a drinking song for kids our age back then. Huge album, double platinum sales, plus a Grammy nomination, number 9 on the U.S. Billboard album charts. That hit single, Once Bitten, Twice Shy, number 5 on the singles charts in the States. The highest selling, highest charting album ever released by Great White. I'm starting to see a trend here.
Well, and I remember thinking, you know, a lot of ballads that were released around this time were fluff, you know, wasn't a lot to them. It was like, okay, standard issue record company ballad, but House of Broken Love is a really great song.
Even Angel's Song.
And Angel's Song is awesome,
there's,
too.
There's a lot of these bands in the 80s that came out with these ballads, and some of them, like you said, are just really fluff, you know, they're really not good, you know. But then there's some, and Great White, Jack Russell, these guys are great at doing these ballads where they become a little bit deeper and a little bit stronger and a little more meaningful and a little more listenable too.
Mark Kendall's lead playing is just phenomenal.
Oh, man, those guys are awesome.
I wish they'd get
that
back
lineup
together.
Man, if they could put that lineup right there back together,
I'd pay to see
it. Would definitely. And buy the new album and whatever else was needed. Totally. Yeah. All right, let's see. Keep on moving. You know, and we're talking about 1989, and the importance of MTV and the rock video boom of the mid to late 80s just cannot be overstated with what we're talking about here today. MTV were kingmakers of bands in 1989. They had the power to make you into a household name in the homes of every cable subscriber in the United States, or they could ignore you and, you know, you don't get that.
Yeah.
This causes many bands considered too crude for MTV to tone down their images in exchange for higher levels of fortune and fame. Motley Crue. but not Wasp. We'll be right back. You know, after releasing three albums of not suitable for primetime material, I've got to imagine that Blackie Lawless around this time's got to kind of come to a crossroads, you know, where he's got to decide, is it time to tone things down and write some love ballads? I mean, you got to figure Blackie Lawless is looking at all these other bands that are making big bucks, you know, doing that, following that formula, cozying up to MTV, getting played in the afternoons around time school's getting out. Blackie Lawless doesn't do that. He doesn't follow trends, you know?
No, he doesn't.
He's Blackie. He does what Blackie does.
He builds giant mic stands.
That's right, and he releases The Headless Children. While it is a departure in style from previous albums where the lyrics are sometimes, you know, offensive just to be offensive, you know what I mean? Just lewd just for lewdness sake kind of thing, and just to be over the top. On this one, the lyrics are a lot deeper and a little more thought-provoking, but still hard rocking and heavy. You got Chris Holmes, Johnny Rodd, and Frankie Benali on this one. And this is pretty cool. Pete Townsend was quoted as saying that Wasp's cover of The Real Me was more how he wished the original version by The Who would have turned out.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Huh.
And then, of course, all you got to do is look at the scary-ass album cover to know that Blackie wasn't selling out to Housewives, Mid-America Housewives anytime soon.
Well, that kind of Townsend quote kind of makes sense now, because that makes sense on why Daughtry started throwing meat out into the audience on the next tour. I guess he was trying to make Pete happy.
We need more meat thrown at the audience.
Right.
More chainsaw. Try on this chainsaw jockstrap.
As I say, have a buzzsaw cod piece.
Yeah, buzzsaw. That's right. 48 on the U.S. Billboard album charts. It's much more well received in Europe.
Yeah.
But, you know, 48's not bad. He produced it himself. He doesn't go get, you know, a fancy producer like Michael Wagner or Alan Niven. He does it himself, and, you know, he's not bowing down to MTV.
No.
He'll take a little bit of airplay on MTV and a little bit of time on the news against the PMRC.
What would a Wasp power ballad sound like, though?
But, you know, over the years...
Did they do any?
Yeah, Blackie's done some stuff.
I haven't followed them as closely as you have.
That's a little bit, you know, they're not fluff, I'll tell you that.
Should we do a Wasp discussion one of these days?
The lighter side of Wasp?
No, like a catalog discussion.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love it. I'd love to do it.
Because that's a band I want to learn more about, and that's the way I usually how I get into them more.
It's kind of cool how we do these, and we just kind of go in chronological order, so I'm going to just kick back for a little while now.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's my turn for a while, isn't it? Okay, man, this is if I had to make a list of most underrated albums ever, this one would be on it, because it's criminally horrible that this album didn't get a ton of attention, because it's loaded with talent and the songwriting is stellar and the guitar playing, holy shit.
Yeah, I'd go one step further and say this is one of the most underrated bands around.
Oh, totally. That, you know, should I wish they had lasted longer. I'm talking about Blue Murder. And I guess you could call it a super group. I mean, because all the guys came from well-established artists. You had John Sykes on guitar and vocals, and Tony Franklin and Carmine Appice.
Yeah.
And produced by Bob Rock, Little Mountain Studios in Vancouver. This is the self-titled album. Came out April 25th. The album is dedicated to Phil Lynott, because John Sykes had done a stint in Thin Lizzy there.
That's
at
right.
The end. And, of course, also famously, John wrote and played the vast majority of the Whitesnake 1987 album.
That's
true.
He's
pretty much the mastermind behind the music on that album.
Right.
Because Coverdale wasn't doing stuff like that back in the early 80s and whatnot. Whitesnake was a much more blues-based band. And then here comes John Sykes with his shredding guitar. Check this out.
Just like crazy. more than that, go to our Amazon link and buy that album because the whole thing is filled with awesome tunes.
For sure. John Sykes freaking rules, and you'll find that along with all the other albums we're talking about here today in the show notes. Click on that. You go through the Decibel Geek link to Amazon. You help us out. You don't got to buy anything in particular. You don't got to spend a penny extra than you otherwise would have, but Amazon is cool enough to give us a little kickback here. Check out all this music. Support the artists.
Yeah, that's That Blue Murder album, man, totally worth your money.
Yeah, I can imagine if you go to Amazon, it's probably not going to be that expensive, and it's going to, yeah, like Chris said, totally be worth it for you.
Huge guitars, huge drums, it's great stuff.
All right, we're making our way through the first part of the year pretty good. We're cooking right along. That brings us right up to May.
All right, May 4th, a U.S. jury convicts Oliver North in the Iran-Contra affair, and this was a big deal.
It was a big deal. I guess I was too young to really care or understand what was going on with all that.
The main thing I remember of it is there was a skateboard trick I learned, and it was called Ollie North, and it was named after him.
The Ollie North.
The Ollie North.
Nice.
That's where you basically do like a hand plant. You put hold onto the board with your feet and grab the board and put it like up over you, like a handstand
right.
with a skateboard. That's an Ollie North. And I think I accomplished it successfully one time out of 100. But yeah, I remember it. I mean, he was involved with selling arms off to other countries and stuff, which probably is pretty standard today.
I'm sure, you know, and it's a lot of stuff back then that we're probably still dealing with today. Which we're like, well, we're going to sell weapons to this group so they can fight that group. And now that they've defeated that group,
they come after us.
They're mad at us, yeah. And you know, because we didn't give them enough weapons or more weapons. And
yeah,
you know, that stuff happening in '89 still comes back and bites us today. Sometimes I bet.
And that concludes the political portion
all
of this
over the
episode.
World, not just us.
Yeah. So, and a great album that came out in '89 was the debut album by Dangerous Toys.
Yeah.
And this band was from Texas and fronted by Jason McMaster, who's also known from a band called Broken Teeth and a Kiss tribute band called Sick, S-S-I-K.
Right on.
And Jason plays in like 7 bands at a time, right? Like even now.
That's cool.
So I guess that's the way to make it in music these days, play in 7 different bands so you can pull enough money in to make as what you'd make on one back then.
I guess, yeah.
So the guy, he's a hardworking guy. This album's produced by Max Norman, who worked with Ozzy, Y&T, Loudness, and Megadeth. And this album was certified gold in 1994, so it took a while. But big singles off this album were Scared and Teasing Pleasing.
Great songs.
But this is a cool track. This is a track called Queen of the Nile.
Of the Decibel Geek Army?
You slimy scumbag, get on your face and give me 25.
Join us on our fan page at facebook.com/DecibelGeek.
Def Leppard's Hysteria has finally reached the number one spot in Australia. It's taken 2 years and 16 million sales internationally, making it the biggest rock album ever.
Rock, baby!
There's over an hour of state-of-the-art rock and roll, including Rocket and Love Bites. And the huge new single, Pour Some Sugar on Me. Def Leppard's Hysteria. 16 million great reasons to get it.
They said it wasn't humanly possible, but now you can have all the power and excitement of Nintendo right in the palm of your hand. Introducing Game Boy, It's portable, it's in stereo, and its games are interchangeable. Plus, Game Boy comes with the outrageous new game, Tetris. And for head-to-head competition, use the revolutionary Video Link and blow your opponent away. Game Boy, only from Nintendo. Now you're playing with power, portable power.
All right, we're back. More Decibel Geek Podcast. We're getting into the home stretch here, but we are looking at the world that was 1989. We're having fun doing it.
Yeah, that was a little bit of White Lion, Little Fighter from the Big Game album that came out in June of 1989. If you want to hear a cool talk with Mike Tramp, Aaron got to conduct that a few months ago.
Yeah.
And check that in the archives.
At the venue formerly known as the Rutledge.
Yeah, the now defunct Rutledge.
That's a bummer.
I know. So let's talk about some movies that came out in 89.
All right, top worldwide movies that came out in 1989. Let's go a quick rundown. The top 10. Number 10, Born on the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty far old movie.
It was a hard movie to watch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Number 9, totally different from that, The Little Mermaid.
Also a hard movie to watch.
Indeed. Number 8, Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome. Yeah. Number 7, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Mm-hmm. That was pretty kick-ass for its time. I really liked that. Lethal Weapon 2 was hugely popular in 89. That was number 6. Number 5, the late Robin Williams, Dead Poets Society. Number 4, Look Who's Talking. How funny was that in 89?
In the 89, very funny. Now, not so much.
Not so much now, but back then it was pretty funny. Number 3, Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
That was a big one. Number 2 worldwide was Batman. In the United States, Batman was number 1.
Huge.
Batman was everywhere in 89.
When, in fact, when I was doing research and artwork for this episode, over and over again, Batman.
You type in 1989 and it comes up pictures of Michael
over
Keaton
the,
and
yeah,
Jack Nicholson
everywhere. Tons. It's still considered a huge thing for that year.
Sure it is. And number 1 in the world of movies was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yeah, I love that movie.
That was a huge one. And you know, some of my personal favorites that maybe just didn't quite crack the top 10. No Holds Barred.
Knew that was coming up. That sports entertainment movie.
Right. Exactly. UHF with Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah,
that was a great movie.
That's a classic with Kramer before he was Kramer.
Yeah. The Burbs with Tom Hanks. That was a good one. The Dream Team. That was another one with Michael Keaton. Jean-Claude Van Damme's Kickboxer.
Yeah.
That was a classic.
I was a big Van Damme fan back then.
Yeah. Nightmare on Elm Street 5, they're up to already in 89.
Mm-hmm.
One of my all-time favorites, Pet Sematary, Stephen King. Uncle Buck came out in 89. That's a great movie.
My kids love that movie.
That's funny as hell. I mean, John Candy, that guy is timeless.
He is.
You know, I'm going to always miss him. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. We're going to be seeing a lot of that on TV here in the next few weeks.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Other big movies that I really liked in 89, Major League.
I love that movie.
Roadhouse.
Nobody puts... That's Dirty Dancing. Nobody puts Baby in a Corner. I'm getting my Swayze movies confused.
You're getting your Swayze.
Roadhouse was a pain don't hurt.
Yeah, that's right. That was a good movie. Another one of my favorites, Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah,
that was a great movie in '89, and my personal number one favorite movie of 1989. Yeah, I figured you'd agree with this. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yes.
Loved it.
We have Aaron and Chris's excellent podcast.
That's it. That's pretty much sums
it's
up what this is.
Kind of the blueprint for what we do.
Totally. Excellent.
Bogus.
Bogus.
Whoa. All right.
Iron Maiden.
Yeah. Put them in the Iron Maiden. Excellent.
Excellent.
Execute them.
Bogus.
Yeah. Although I think.
We could probably sit here and quote that whole movie.
Oh,
if we
totally.
Just got like the first couple lines. And we could just run it.
And part two is every bit as good, if not better, than
if not
the
better,
first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
Actually, I know he ain't going to listen. I bought my kid both copies of that for Christmas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because he's never seen it.
That'll be fun to watch.
And 3 is supposed to be coming out sometime.
Yeah, they're supposed
soon.
To be working on it.
Can't wait.
Cool. Okay, so I got the next one. I couldn't put play this band on this one. Badlands came out with their self-titled debut in 1989.
Yeah.
May 11th it came out, recorded at One-on-One Studios in L.A. and the Record Plant in New York. Produced by Paul O'Neill, who worked with Aerosmith, Sabotage, and Metal Church. The song I'm about to play was, kind of the hit from the album, and it's actually being played now with Jake's new band, Red Dragon Cartel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they cool. broke it out again. Jake's not a big fan of it himself, but he knew the crowd wanted to hear it because it was a big hit for him.
And it's a great song.
And he's got Badlands' original bassist, Greg Chasen, is now playing in Red Dragon Cartel with Jake.
Oh, that's cool
so
as
you got kind of
awesome.
A half half Badlands reunion going on there.
That's pretty cool.
This is Dreams in the Dark. Rounded out by Ray Gillen and Kiss drummer Eric Singer.
Heck yeah, man. Jake E. Lee coming back strong after being jettisoned from the Ozzy Osbourne band in 89.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
And actually, I saw the Meister, one of our writers, just put up an article that the Red Dragon Cartel was the band he saw the most in 2014. I think he said he saw them like 6 times.
Nice.
Over the year, and he said that's not enough.
So. That's good, man. Those guys are hard workers, and they're all over the place. If they're coming to your area, check them out.
Come to Nashville.
That'd be awesome. They should.
We did good for Sebastian Bach. Well, you know,
yeah, we did. We packed it out for him.
Yeah. So let's see. What we got next? Okay.
May 25th.
Okay, May 25th. Mikhail Gorbachev is named the Soviet president.
We better just let's just stick to the music. We're going to get in trouble if we keep going politics.
He had the cool thing on his forehead, though.
Yeah, he did. That was an awesome tattoo.
That's all I wanted to say.
I can never figure out what country that was he had tattooed on his forehead. I just assumed it was somewhere in Russia.
I thought it was grape juice.
Grape juice.
All right.
A little tobacco spit stain or something.
I don't know. All right. Well, onto the music.
We are political.
Yeah. We're talking about grape juice. Okay.
Wine stains.
On May 23rd, the Ramones released their 11th studio album called Brain Drain, produced by Jean Beauvoir, Bill Laswell, and Daniel Ray.
I know that guy.
Kiss fans know who Jean Beauvoir is.
Sure.
Wrote plenty of songs with Paul Stanley in the 80s and, of course, also a member of the Plasmatics.
Yeah.
This is the last album to feature Dee Dee, although he barely, if at all, played on this album because he... Well, the heroin had gotten him pretty bad by that point. The song I'm going to play has been covered by Eddie Vedder and Zeke for the We're a Happy Family tribute to the Ramones album.
That's actually a really cool cover.
Really good cover. And it's still covered regularly by Pearl Jam at their shows.
Right on.
This is I Believe in Miracles. That was a pretty cool song. The big hit off the album was the Pet Sematary song that they put out. And I got pretty good MTV exposure on that song. Ramones never got the breakthrough hit that they always thought should have gotten, but It's I've never seen a band where more T-shirts sold than records. It's
yeah, that's funny. And people, a lot of times you go up and say, hey, cool shirt. Yeah, you know, I found this at the Hot Topic. They, well, do you know what a Ramon is?
No. It's like people like the idea of being a Ramones fan, but they're not really a fan. I don't.
Right. I've never understood that.
Me, on the other hand, I've got all their albums and I don't own a shirt.
I don't have a T-shirt. Yeah, that's funny. Love the music, won't wear a T-shirt.
I need to rectify that and get a shirt one
Those
of these days.
Damn mustaches over there ruined it for us. That's cool, man. The Ramones still kicking ass in 1989. Up next, I've got one here. This is a follow-up to their moderately successful 1987 album, Visual Lies. I'm talking about Lizzie Borden coming back in 1989 with the album Master of Disguise. Lizzie Borden, known for their straight-ahead anthemic rock songs, you know, and over-the-top stage antics. Lizzie Borden returns this year with something a little bit different. It's a blend of the like classic Lizzie Borden sounding rockers, you know, along with some ready for but still not played by MTV styled ballads. It's got female backing vocalists. It's even got an orchestra on here.
Really?
I think Lizzie might have been going for some sort of like Ezra-esque idea of a heavy metal version of The Wall or something.
Hmm.
You know, but in 89, some of the longtime Lizzie Borden fans see it more like an Elder. And it doesn't sell as well as previous Lizzie Borden albums. Nonetheless, features some pretty awesome music.
Man, every time you pick a Lizzie Borden song, I start listening to it, and then I'll listen to the rest of the album and everything. Yeah. And I even sent you a message like, "How the fuck are they so underrated?" Because this is like,
I don't know,
because it's stuff even I missed out on. I'm like, I'll hit it here, and I'm like, why was I not a fan of this stuff back in the day?
Well, Lizzie Borden was another band that was a lot more well received outside the United States than in the States, and the band would go on to tour on this album for a couple of years. You know, they toured on this album. And they, of course, appeared prominently in The Decline of Western Civilization, Part 2, The Metal Years. And then they basically disappear for a while until the rubble's cleared from the great grunge movement that no one yet knows is coming. But I think this album's much more critically acclaimed today than it was at the time of its release. It's kind of become like a cult classic.
You think they stepped a little far out of the box back in the day, and people are like, what are they doing?
Yeah, you know, because you go from, you know, American metal and Me Against the World to something like that.
Give them the axe.
It's far out, you know, but it's still a pretty great album. I like it.
That's competitive with anything else that was out there at the time.
Like I said, even this one, you know, it had the ready for MTV ballads, but MTV just wasn't playing them. Lizzie Borden was just a little too weird for, you know, MTV in the middle of the afternoon on American TVs.
I guess so. So we're in June, and June 20th, Mr. Big releases their self-titled debut album. And this was produced by Kevin Elson, who worked with Europe, Journey, and Lynyrd Skynyrd. It reached number 46 on the Billboard 200. This wasn't their breakthrough. The breakthrough, of course, came with Lean Into It with the To Be With You power ballad.
Oh, yeah.
And but it's funny how they got characterized as like just a hair group that played power ballads, because that song was so different than everything else they did.
Right.
Because you had Paul Gilbert and Billy Sheehan and, you know, on bass and guitar, and those guys are fucking virtuosos.
Oh, yeah. Billy Sheehan's amazing.
And most of the music was built to show off their musical prowess.
Right.
And then Eric Martin, you know, what a set of pipes on the guy. Yeah. And they, a super talented band, but that...
Mr. Big was kind of a super group.
They kind of were. And the leadoff single, Addicted to That Rush, was a bit well known, but it wasn't their breakthrough just yet. But it brought some mainstream into that. Reached number 39 on the mainstream rock chart. But this is a cool track, but a little bit more basic. But I love the sound of the song. This is Blame It on My Youth. Stuff.
Mr. Big is kind of like if you took all the guys from all the music magazines that won all the biggest awards and just put them into one band.
Said, all right, guys, get started.
Get to work. Here you go. It's done.
Yeah. Talented bunch of guys, man.
Heck yeah, Mr. Big's awesome. Still going
strong.
Still
around,
today.
Yeah. Put a couple albums out as a reunited act.
Had one this last year, came out.
Yeah. And Ace, actually the guy that played drums for Ace Frehley's new album, is playing drums with him now, right now.
Oh, right on.
Matt Starr. All right, so let's see what we got left here. You got a couple more.
Well, it was on a bleak and desolate day as the skies broke open and filthy rain poured down upon the gray and lifeless landscape. On that day in June, somewhere in Seattle, in the disgusting, putrid mud, a single black seed cracks open and sprouts. This guy with the sandwich board on the Sunset Strip was right. The end is near.
All righty.
All right. Another band that's forming their own niche in 1989, really doing their own thing, is Faith No More. And Faith No More is a band that's actually been around in various incarnations since 1979.
What?
But it wasn't until they hired Mike Patton as a lead vocalist and released The Real Thing in 1989 did they really make their mark.
79.
Did you know that Big Jim Martin and Cliff Burton were in a band together in San Francisco way back in the day? No, it's got some other really cool name. I can't think of the name offhand now.
Huh.
It was a really cool name, but it must have been when they were kids. So
didn't know that.
Those guys have been doing it forever. So, yeah, Faith No More, the roots go way back, but takes them a long time to make it. They need the right components, and Mike Patton is it. Of course, you know, pushed heavily by MTV for the video, the single Epic. That thing's in constant rotation. Although they would tour with Guns N' Roses and Metallica in the future, and the Epic video was all often sandwiched in between videos like Janie's Got a Gun and Kickstart My Heart, Faith No More quickly established themselves as a different kind of rock band.
Yeah.
Many of the world's music magazines would award this one Album of the Year of 1990.
Oh, yeah.
Even though the real thing is released in the middle of 89, it's a slow burn that actually doesn't even chart until the spring of the following year.
Yeah, I don't really remember noticing it till 90.
Yeah, because it really didn't, you know. Of course, it was once MTV started pushing the video, everybody remembers the flopping fish.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The big deal that was made about that for the epic video. The tour for this album would actually be the first time the band played live with Mike Patton. He comes in before they start writing music for this album. So they've never even played live together until the album comes out and they start touring for it.
Yeah, because wasn't he doing the Mr. Bungle thing before that?
And they got rid of Chuck Mosley and brought him in.
Right. Wow.
Let's see. Faith No More would go on to do play the MTV Music Awards. And, of course, that Saturday Night Live performance, you know, really helps rocket these guys in popularity. And, you know, Faith No More, this one goes to 11 on the U.S. album charts. In 1990, it's huge all over the world, especially Australia. The single Epic was number 2 in the U.S., number 1 in Australia. See what I'm saying? Multiple Grammy Award nominations in 1991.
Really?
It takes a while. And Faith No More would go on to enjoy a long career of being weird and different. But that's okay. Great band.
Yeah, and a little bit of a funk sound coming in, you know.
Yeah, it was kind of a breath of fresh air, but these guys weren't, you know, it's not like Faith No More was like on the crest of the grunge movement, because they weren't grunge, you know, and they were somewhere in between what was and what was coming.
Kind of like Ugly Kid Joe.
Kind of like Ugly Kid Joe.
Two of the more unique
bands.
A little
bit Red Hot Chili Peppers, a little bit kind of falls in there too. You know, they got the funky, you know, late 90s kind of groove going on.
Yeah, definitely unique.
I love it. Love Faith No More.
And I got a unique band to play the show out. But before we go, guys, remember to check out decibelgeek.com. Got a ton of great articles going there and a new redesign coming in the new year.
A new what?
A new redesign of the website.
Oh, a redesign.
Yeah.
Nice, finally.
Yeah,
people have been asking for that for a while.
we think we found the right guy to do the job.
It's funny. Every time,
it ain't going to be me.
Every time we've updated that thing, we think, well, this is great, man. This is really awesome. And then within a week or so, it becomes outdated. It all needs to be fixed.
It's a good site, but it's it does it. The format's wrong because we have too many writers now.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, we need.
Because when we started it under this format,
like
we didn't
three
have
writers.
That many.
Yeah.
Now we've got people
all over the world,
all over the globe, you know, bringing back the rock and roll news all the time at decibelgeek.com. While you're there checking out those awesome articles, and I happen to know because I'm a guy that's, you know, behind the scenes here at Decibel Geek a little bit, there's some really cool stuff coming up on the website. They got some big stuff planned for this holiday season and the upcoming impending end of the year. So keep your eyes open on that. While you're there, you're doing some Christmas shopping, your last minute stuff, it's this week. If you're going to get on Amazon and order something, you better do it real soon because you're running out of time. And if you're going to do that, the best way, like we said, go through the Amazon link at www.decibelgeek.com. Go get you that big Mr. Big album. Get you some, dare I say it, Nirvana. They need help with the album sales, right? You know, go get yourself a DVD, A Weekend at Bernie's. Whatever you get on Amazon, it doesn't matter, because when you do it through the Decibel Geek link, you're helping us out. While you're there, go ahead and get a t-shirt. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, I'm seeing them pop up everywhere now.
That's so very cool.
So, all right, I got one more to play out the show with, and man, this is a great album and a great band, and the drummer is a great guy. And
oh, yeah.
King's X released Gretchen Goes to Nebraska in June 27th, and when we come back next week, we'll do July through December, but
can't wait.
This was their second studio album, produced by Sam Taylor. Sorry, guys, I'm belching. I just had dinner. Concept album was based around a short story written by drummer Jerry Gaskill. And in an interview, he said, somebody asked him, you know, how the name came about. And
was it you? Were you the interviewer?
No, it wasn't
asking?
Me.
Oh.
Cause this was
I happen to know you have interviewed
him. I have interviewed him twice, actually.
Yeah.
He said it actually started as a joke. 6 or 7 years ago, we were unloading the truck, and we were throwing out these silly album titles, and one of our roadies just came up with it off the top of his head. So we just said, yeah, someday we're going to call an album that.
Gretchen Goes to Nebraska.
Yeah, Gretchen Goes to Nebraska. And he says, we just saw him on our last tour, and we told him we named the album because you said that. He didn't even remember it. So everybody's thinking he's going to really be impressed. And he's like, I don't remember saying that.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know that. That's
so, guys.
You guys are weird.
So, yeah, the closing out June of 1989. This is King's X with Over My Head, and we'll see you next week.
For part 2.
Over my head. Can't you hear it? I hear it, don't you hear it? Listen.